Today on Maine Calling, Maine's extensive and well-loved trails. Maine has thousands of miles of outdoor trails. They cater to everyone from hikers to ATV riders, mountain bikers, horseback riders, amateur naturalists, and so many more. But they take a lot of upkeep, and many Maine trails took a real beating with the severe weather in recent years. I'm Jennifer Rooks. A new bond measure provides $30 million to help repair and improve Maine's trail system. Today on Maine Calling, we'll find out how the grant process for that money will work, and we'll learn about Maine communities who are building their economic development plans around existing or new trails. The state of the state's precious trails, today on Maine Calling. That's just ahead.
Maine Calling is made possible in part by Rennie's, a Maine shopping adventure with 19 locations across the state, now open in Bangor and Waterville, and by Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering health care, education, and support to islands and coastal Down East communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. The wide variety of trails in Maine are yet one more reason to get outside, and they are about to get a boost thanks to a voter-approved referendum. Today, we are going to talk trails with Aaron Amadon, who is founder of Town 4 Trail Services, and Douglas Beck, Outdoor Recreation Program Manager and State Trail Administrator. We invite you to join the conversation. Do you have a favorite trail? Do you help maintain it? Or do you know a spot that you would love to see become a trail? You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Welcome to both of you. So happy we're having this conversation on a beautiful sunny day right before the beginning of summer. Doug, I want to get an update from you. I know that the Maine Trail Bond provides $30 million to improve Maine's trails, improve, maintain, maybe change some to have them be more accessible to more kinds of people. Where are we in that process? Are we already doing work? Are we taking grants? What do people need to know?
Well, hopefully they're not out, all out on trails and folks listening to this show right now. And what they need to know is that the $30 million is available per the grant rules. We are rolling out $7.5 million a year for each of the first 4 years of the program. That $7.5 million has to be allocated 25% to motorized trails, 25% to non-motorized trails, 50% to multi-use diverse trails. We have a maximum grant award amount of $250,000. And now is the time to be working on your grant application, because grant applications are due the last Friday in September.
All right. So the last Friday in September, if you are a member of a local land trust or on your town trail committee, this is the time to be working on that. What kinds of projects are going to be likely to win grant money, Doug? Are there priorities here?
The only priorities are that they are a worthy project, that they are well designed, well planned, and feasible, and that they are either focused on trail renovation projects or new trail construction.
Okay, trail renovation projects or new trail construction. And when you say trail renovation, would something like making it more accessible be something that's a renovation project?
Absolutely, that's one of the focuses of the program, is to increase accessibility. It's a very worthy goal. A lot of people have been limited in the number of types of trails that they can use based on the construction techniques of the trail. So we're really looking forward to having this program help get more people out, and importantly, full families. So there's, in the average family, there's a range of skills and abilities. And accessible trails allow more participation from everybody in the family.
All right. Well, Aaron, Doug said trail renovation and also new trail building, and that's where you come in. I was really interested to see a trail taking shape a couple years ago up near Greenville, and there is so much more to it than people might think. Take us from the beginning. If somebody comes to you and says, you know, my town doesn't have enough trails, we have this piece of land, we'd really like to create a trail, how does someone identify whether it's a good place for a trail and then where to put the trail?
Yeah, thanks for having me. So there's really two phases to this process. One is the planning phase and the other is the design phase. And so in the planning phase, we start to identify some of those key elements. So we're defining the purpose and the character of the trail. So what is the intended use? What is the level of use? What is the level of challenge? And what is the kind of trail experience that we're trying to create in this particular area? And then we want to make sure that we have stakeholder engagement. So getting input from the community members, the user groups, landowners, nonprofits, the land trust, the managers, everyone that can help build support usually will ensure that the project reflects the local values for that particular area. And then we start with sort of the overall big picture resource inventory and the field assessments. So we're looking at soils, hydrology, slope, geology, vegetation, wildlife, cultural resources, and some of the constraints in those particular areas as well. And then we start with like the general overall corridor planning and assessment. So we're looking at some of that like GIS data and LIDAR data, some ground truthing to know where particular challenging areas are. And then we sort of develop those trail specifications. So those parameters like how wide the trail will be, what's the intended use, the corridor, and the purposes of like the trail surface and grades if we're considering accessibility. So that's all sort of stage of it. And then we sort of transition to the design phase, and we do a lot more of the ground truthing on the design phase. So we'll do a lot of that field-based alignment where we're out in the woods and we're hanging flag lines and we're looking for ways to create a positive user experience. So we're looking for gateways, like two trees that create this corridor that just is visually inviting, or the parking areas, or a wonderful vista, something that really creates that positive user experience. And then we'll put together the final design documentation. So it will specify the corridor, so the width that the trees will be trimmed back to, and then the tread width, which is what the trail user walks on. So if it's accessible, it'll meet specifications. If it's mountain bike, it will meet specifications. And if it's just pedestrian only, it will meet different specifications. And then we consider the environmental and regulatory compliances. So what type of permitting will we need in that area? And then from all of that information, then we can develop the cost estimate so that land managers and agencies can then apply for grants and start their fundraising.
So don't wait till September to make your application for a...
Yeah.
Now do you find, Aaron, do you find people are often surprised at the cost?
Yeah, a little bit. I think, you know, there's just this tradition of like, oh, you're just blazing a trail in the woods, you know, and there's really a lot of science and engineering and art and creativity that goes into sustainable trail building and design. And it is a profession. I didn't know it was a profession when I first started, but the trail industry has started to explode, and there's more and more need and desire for employment opportunities in the trail building world.
And I suspect building a trail is just like so many other things in life. If you do it right the first time, there's going to be less cost in maintaining it. Yeah, I see you nodding. Doug, let me turn back to you, because I know part of the reason that people supported this bond and did so by a wide margin is because people saw two things. One, so many people used Maine's trails during the epidemic, during the pandemic, and got outside and really appreciated what was likely right in their backyard. But also, the big storms we had a year and a half ago really did some damage. Tell me what kind of damage you're encountering in some of Maine's favorite trails.
Well, it's dramatic damage. It revealed the lack of the art and science that Aaron just talked about. You know, where the legacy of trails, a lot of trails in Maine, are just a corridor through the woods, where it made sense to somebody. And there was no trail tread construction, no structural development. They used materials that they had available. So a lot of undersized culverts, a lot of bridges that were too short and maybe too low. And the weather conditions that we've had over the last several years revealed the weaknesses in those designs. And we've had trails that are completely destroyed. Culverts blown out, bridges washed away. And sometimes to a remarkable extent, there was an AT bridge up in the aquatic area that was at essentially the top of a little slot canyon, so to speak, and that washed away. So it's amazing. You know, they say water is the strongest power on earth, and good trail design deals with water, and poor trail design does not deal with water, and we're suffering the consequences. And fortunately, you know, the context of the pandemic and the context of the weather conditions that destroyed a lot of trails was the perfect advocacy program for a trail bond. Nobody could have planned that, but it all came just at the right time, and that's where we are now with $30 million to help renovate these trails that need so much help.
Well, let me ask you all before we go to our first break to name some of your favorite trails, maybe some that aren't as well known. Aaron, I'm going to put you on the spot first. If you're not at work but headed out for a beautiful weekend, where might you head?
So I got a treat last year, and I was invited out to Vinyl Haven to look at some of their trails and their trail system. And it's a place that I don't think I would have just gone to, and they have some beautiful trails, very quiet. They might not like me saying this and might want to keep it to themselves a little bit, but I really enjoyed that trail system because it was a mix of that like spruce forest, lots of rocky boulders, and then the view of the bay and the ocean. It just kind of that combination. So that was a real treat for me.
And are those trails multi-use trails or hiking trails?
Pedestrian only trails right now. I will say that we're in a development phase to increase accessibility on some of their trails that are appropriate for that application.
All right, Doug, what about you? Now you're on the spot.
In general, my favorite trails are trails that are intercommunity or intra-community that I could ride a bike on from, you know, point A to point B. Used for alternate transportation, just go for miles and miles of a ride without having to worry about whether anybody can really measure 3 feet distance between the vehicle and the bicycle. But my current favorite project trail is a small trail in St. George that actually Aaron worked on that was just a remarkable combination of situations where it was a town trail to a state park that was under appreciated. And we ended up through a combination of initiatives building an accessible trail that is a short hike or roll out to the coast of Maine and beautiful vistas that otherwise the majority of the population wouldn't have been able to get to. So it's a great project.
What was I going to say? Well, it's interesting to me that you mentioned just a short, accessible trail, that something small can have a really large impact.
Absolutely.
We're going to go to a caller. We'll go to Rich calling from Moosehead. Hi, Rich. Go ahead.
Hi. Hi. Sorry about that. Thank you for taking my call. I've been 12 years as a volunteer on the Little Moose Mountain Trail System, and I've spent my whole life building trails as a professional. And it's really appreciated. These funds are going to be great because the December storms from 2 years ago, we lost bridges and a lot of it got washed out. And I've planned new scenic overlooks as well as built a new beach on the trail system. So this is going to just be a big boost. And I just want to say how much I appreciate this. Thank you.
Oh, Rich, thanks so much for calling. Interesting what he said, Aaron, creating vistas. And I know that, gosh, it was a few decades ago now when they sort of rerouted the Appalachian Trail through Maine. One of the goals was to get parts of it up a little bit higher so there could be some vistas. A big one of the priorities that people come to you with?
Not so much the vistas. I think it's more about increasing sustainability on the entire trail system. So in Maine, we have a lot of legacy trails. And so legacy trails are trails that cannot be rerouted because of easements or constraints with boundaries or the like. And I look a lot at how to increase the sustainability of that current alignment. So that might mean putting in steps or doing a very small, 20-foot reload where we can get water to drain off in more of a sheet flow, so spread the water across the landscape, or armor the trail so it's just that tread surface is hardened. So making some of those upgrades is really more what people reach out to me about, on how do I improve my existing trail that has all of these problems, and how do we upgrade it to incorporate some of those sustainability goals.
All right. Well, Rich, thank you for your call and the work you're doing in your part of Maine. If you'd like to join the conversation, our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email, talk@mainepublic.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today we're talking about Maine's trails, and we'd love to hear from you. Which are your favorites? Are you part of a project to build a new one or fix up one that has had some damage? My guest today, Aaron Amadon, who is founder of Town 4 Trail Services, and Douglas Beck, the state's outdoor recreation program manager. You can share your comments and questions by email, a brief email, please, talk@mainepublic.org. You can comment on Facebook or Instagram or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. On the line with us now is Christina Cannon, who is the president and CEO of Main Street Skowhegan. Christina, welcome back to Maine Calling.
Hey, Jennifer, how are you?
Tell us about the plans for trails in your community. What are you going to do with those that are already there, and are you going to build some new ones?
Sure, yeah. A couple years ago now, we commissioned a trail master plan to assess our current trails and determine what the future of trails looks like in Skowhegan. And we came out with a plan that has about 50 miles worth of interconnected trails, many of them that will be accessible via downtown. So we have a lot of trails now, but we're really hopeful that we can make them more accessible generally. And we want to add some new single-track mountain biking trails as well. So, yeah, it's a combination of really maintaining and making what we have better, but also about the opportunity to explore new opportunities as well for some newer trails.
And what's the thinking? Yeah, what's the thinking? Because you're part of an economic development group. You work with business owners. So why are you focused on trails?
Well, trails are part of the greater plan to make Skowhegan an outdoor recreation hub in the region, and frankly, Central Maine as an outdoor rec hub. And so I think outdoor rec is having its heyday right now. The outdoor rec economy roadmap was a big part of the last couple of years, and trails are certainly a major part of that. But they're part of a greater vision for Skowhegan around riverfront development, our Whitewater Park. And so I think trails not only are going to be a huge economic driver for bringing people and businesses and driving spending in the region, but also attracting new residents, which, of course, we all need in our rural communities.
Okay. Well, Christina, good luck to you. Christina Cannon, president and CEO of Main Street Skowhegan. Doug, Christina mentioned single-track bicycle trails. You talked about liking to ride from town to town, and I'm wondering, if there is a trend in trails in Maine, is that the big one, the growth and excitement about mountain biking, or trail riding, I should say? We used to call it mountain biking.
I would say yes. I think, it seems like every other day there's a new type of biking that people can engage in. Right, it was mountain biking. First it was road biking, then it's mountain biking. Now gravel and fat tire, and you can ride your bike, any bike, all year round. We certainly see a lot of grant applications for trails that have a focus for bike use. It's a strong growth sector.
All right, and Aaron, let me ask you: when you're designing a trail, if you're designing a trail that's multi-use versus one that's purpose-built for mountain biking, is there really a difference?
Yeah, there's a difference. I mean, you could imagine like hiking on a purpose-built mountain bike where the experience is much different, because on a mountain bike, you're riding, and so you want a little bit more of that up, down, some of those sweeping berm turns, where that isn't really all that enjoyable for a hiker per se. So when we talk about multi-use trail design, we really incorporate all the different uses. It's not going to be as exciting necessarily for that hardcore, wants that challenge mountain biker, but it certainly will be available for folks with families or kids or someone that doesn't want that challenging experience. So some design directives are very different when we're looking at a technical mountain bike trail versus a multi-use trail.
We'll go to Melissa calling from Brewer. Hi, Melissa, go ahead.
Hi, thank you. I'm just wondering about, land use in general and how to get accessibility. I grew up in Maine, and I'm old enough to remember where, neighbors just, there was a trail and, people used it. A lot of that has gone away, but I also wonder about old discontinued roads. And I understand that the litigation around that is pretty shady, and how those old roads are used. And, they seem like a great place for a trail. That's why people use them. So I'm kind of wondering about how all that is litigated.
Yeah, Melissa, when you say old roads, do you mean like paper roads that were never built?
No, some of them are just old roads in town that were discontinued maybe 60 years ago, if not more.
All right. Doug, Aaron, go ahead.
Well, I can't necessarily speak to the litigation issue. I can just talk about my experience. So I actually live on a discontinued road, and our local ATV club has come to the neighbors on the road and asked for permission to use that for an ATV trail. And then I do see a couple of bikers out there. My understanding, it all depends if it's discontinued or unmaintained. Some of that language is important in how you would go about finding if you could put a trail on that particular parcel, and then working with landowners to get permission to use that unmaintained or discontinued road.
Yeah, and one of the keys relative to grant funding is that the Maine Trails program can be used to acquire easements over trail corridors, which is a major concern given that Maine is mostly private ownership, and most, especially snowmobile trails, but some ATV trails and other trails exist just by the good graces of the landowners to allow those uses. There's a lot of interest in using funding to acquire easements. We could use the Maine Trails program to acquire easements over abandoned roads, but the kicker is going to be whether they are formally abandoned and no longer in public right-of-way status. So there's some nuance to all of that, but the program can help.
But Doug, let me ask you just more broadly about, you talked about how Maine is, so much of it is private land, and I believe it's more than any other state or any other state in New England. And I'm wondering to myself, are you seeing a shift in how, what Melissa's talking about, how people used to not care if people walked or rode their bike on their property, and now there are more people posting their property and telling people to keep off?
Well, I don't have data to support this, but certainly anecdotally, and from the experience of my last month and a half on the road doing Maine Trails Program workshops, there is a feeling that there's an increase in, again, pandemic-related folks learned that they could move to Maine, work for Maine, buying land, and then the first thing that goes up is signs prohibiting access, not appreciating the long, valuable practice of public use of private land. So it's an issue which ended up in proposed legislation to help buy easements over trail corridors. So so again, it's important. It's a challenge, and but it's something we're working on trying to resolve and preserve that trail access.
Melissa, thanks so much for your call. We're going to turn now to Brian Threlkeld, who is Membership Director of Maine Outdoor Brands. Brian, thanks so much for calling in.
Hey, thanks, Jennifer. Happy to be here. And hey, Doug. Hey, Aaron.
I know, Brian, that you all do some economic studies. Tell us what you know about the economic impact of trails in Maine.
Sure. So the numbers on trails are kind of a larger contributor to the overall state's $3.4 billion outdoor recreation economy, which provides 30,000 jobs here in the state of Maine. Federally, we're ranked sixth overall in terms of that state contribution to our GDP. And trails are certainly a huge driver. I mean, there's 20,000 miles of snowmobile and ATV trails, and Doug and Aaron might have a better idea of how many, you know, hiking, walking trails are, but I'm sure there's a lot of those as well.
Yeah, I'm going to stop you. 20,000 miles of ATV and snowmobiling trails. Doug, do you know the number for other kinds of trails?
Why, yes, I do. So Bureau of Parks and Lands alone has over 400 miles of non-motorized trails. The Bureau also has 342 miles of multi-use trails. Think Downey Sunrise Trail and Heritage Trails. Baxter State Park has 215 miles of non-motorized trails. Land trusts have approximately 2,500 miles of trails. Water trails, interestingly, water trails are fundable, over 1,300 miles of water trails in the state of Maine. Not surprising, given all the lakes and rivers. And speaking of water, there's also an estimated 375 miles of coastal water trails with the Maine Island Trail Association. So everybody here is near a trail. You might not know it, but there's one next door to you.
Brian, before I let you go, I want to ask you, with this $30 million bond, what are you hoping to see? What kinds of innovations, what kind of priorities are you hoping as Maine gets ready to improve its trail system?
Sure. I mean, I think, Doug and Christina mentioned the interconnectivity piece, which I think is really big. Building trails, kind of downstream, down trail effects of that. Are creating destinations for people, especially in rural parts of the state, and also supporting a lot of jobs. And so I think, building sustainable trails that are going to withstand a changing climate is really important, and also just getting people outside. I think when people are outside, they're supporting local businesses, they're being healthier, they're creating jobs. And so it's just this great virtuous cycle that trails are really the backbone of in our state.
All right. Well, thank you so much. That was Brian Threlkeld, who is Membership Director of Maine Outdoor Brands. Let's see. We'll go to Chloe calling from Swanville. Hi, Chloe. Go ahead.
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead.
Hi. I want you to know about the Penobscot River Paddling Trail. It's 100 miles down the Penobscot River from Medway to the sea in Bucksport, and there are free campsites, rustic campsites with tent space and a picnic table and an outhouse kind of thing, roughly every 10 miles. And it's lovely. It takes you down a most beautiful river.
Wow, that sounds wonderful. And I think Doug knows about it. He's grinning.
Well, I'm grinning because we've talked primarily about trail and trail tread and trail corridor. But the Maine Trails Program can also fund trailhead and trailside amenities. So for water trails, boat launches, put-ins and takeouts, campsites, privies. So those rustic accommodations all could benefit from an infusion of MTP funding.
Aha. Uh-huh. So you're saying that people who work with the Penobscot River Paddling Trail are also eligible to apply for funding under the bond?
They sure are.
All right, Chloe, thanks so much for calling in. I'm going to go to an email here. This is from Lucy. My parents bought a little mountain in Lovell in the 1960s because they loved to explore the woods and hike. They built a beautiful trail to the top of Amos Mountain. Later, when my mom was aging and my dad had passed away, my mother sold, in a bargain sale, the property to the Greater Lovell Land Trust. Now there are more beautiful trails on the mountain and a network of other trails maintained by the Greater Lovell Land Trust here in Western Maine. The trail my folks built is called the Rogers Family Trail. Lucy, what a beautiful story. And Aaron, I'm guessing that you get to hear beautiful stories like that all the time.
I do. One of my favorite things is to go for a walk with the landowners, managers, and the community members, and really just hear their vision. Oftentimes when I get called in, they're ready to build, and they've already done a lot of that thought and the planning, and just they know the history of the land. So that's a real treat for me to be able to walk the property and then try to take their vision and turn it into reality, and build that sustainable trail that provides access to all.
And what a legacy Lucy's parents have left. Here's an email from Robert, who's an ecologist. While we all love trails, there is a growing body of research about the impacts of trails on wildlife. Surprisingly, walking trails may have more impact than bike or motorized trails because hikers move slowly and have more time to disturb wildlife. Good trail planning leaves large blocks of habitat where wildlife will be undisturbed. Water birds are very sensitive, so trails near water bodies should have occasional spurs to water vistas rather than running along the shore. For more information on the subject, see New Hampshire Fish and Game's Trails for People and Wildlife website and guide. Both of you are nodding. Doug, what do you want to add to what Robert has said?
Well, I want to add something that might not be very popular, but it's the thought that maybe every trail doesn't need to exist. And there are environmental implications of trails. And for the last probably 10,000 years in the state of Maine anyway, we've been on a trail building model. And the question to begin to try to answer is how many trails are enough trails? And if we have enough trails, do we have enough good trails? And do we transition from a trail construction mode to a trail renovation mode where we focus on specific types of trails and make them as sustainable as possible and look at potentially a more thoughtful model of trail investments into the future?
Aaron, thoughts?
Yeah, I'd like to add that as we start to evaluate some of these trail systems, is that we really start to look at like the four key concepts of sustainability and trail development. So we're talking like our physical sustainability, so something that minimizes soil displacement, ensures effective drainage, and is designed for long-term durability. And then we also consider that environmental sustainability. So identifying the cultural and ecological resources, following some of those state and federal local environmental regulations, doing those field inventories that I mentioned earlier. And then that third pillar is the financial sustainability. So we always say it's really hip to build new trails, but we don't put enough money into the maintenance of our existing trails. So, you know, thinking about longevity and consider your initial costs, the ongoing maintenance costs and potential future needs. And then sort of that last pillar is that social sustainability. So we want to make sure that we evaluate that carrying capacity to avoid overuse on the trail system. We plan for inclusivity and diversity, and then think about some of those amenities like parking spaces or overflow parking, which we know can be an issue on some of our trails. So really considering those four key concepts: the physical sustainability, the environmental sustainability, the financial sustainability, and the social sustainability when we're evaluating our existing trails and considering when we're going to construct and build new trails.
Well, we are talking about Maine's trails on Maine Calling. Join the conversation, 1-800-399-3566. If you're quick, you can find us on social media or send an email to talk@mainecalling.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Our topic today, the state of Maine's trails. My guest today, Douglas Beck, who is the state's Outdoor Recreation Program Manager. He is also State Trail Administrator and State Liaison Officer with the Land and Water Conservation Fund. Also with us is Aaron Amadon, who is founder of Town 4 Trail Services. We invite you to join the conversation. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. Comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. On the line with us now is Amy Vlachos. She is Associate Teaching Professor at the University of New England's College of Business and Director of their Outdoor Business and Innovation Bachelor's Program. Hi, Professor Vlachos. Thanks for calling in.
I know it's a tricky last name. It's Vlachos, It's tricky.
Okay, I'm glad to have you correct me. Tell me about this program, the Outdoor Business and Innovation Program. How many students are enrolled, and what kind of careers are they headed to?
Yeah, so we just launched last year. We currently have 15 students in the program. It's the only program of its kind in the country, and basically it's looking at the business side of outdoor recreation, those wanting to be entrepreneurs and have their own businesses within, most of them within Maine, which is great, involved in outdoor recreation.
So we're talking about Maine's trails today. From your perspective, your vantage point, how important are Maine's trails to Maine's outdoor economy?
Oh, I mean, you know, when I think about Maine's trail system, it's not just for recreation. It's, you know, a way to have community connection, economic vitality, conservation. And we do a lot within this outdoor business and innovation degree with the trail system. So I was really excited to hear the topic today.
Well, Amy, thanks so much for calling in. Amy Vlachos with UNE's College of Business and director of their Outdoor Business and Innovation Bachelor's Program. Let's see, we're going to go to another email here. This is a simple one. I think this is for you, Douglas. An email from Martha. May a YMCA apply for the trail grants to renovate their trails, or do you need to be a town or city?
Any nonprofit that has appropriate control and tenure over the trails that they want to benefit is an eligible applicant. So YMCA would be an eligible applicant.
There we go. An email from Cindy. I would like to point out that the concept of multi-user trails doesn't really work. A walker, skier, biker, snowshoe enthusiast is looking for a different experience than an ATV or a snowmobiler. I want a quiet, peaceful experience, not the sound, smell, and dust of motorized vehicles. Okay, so this is one of those really sticky points, isn't it, Aaron? This is maybe the big one, right?
Yeah, and so a lot of that planning and design phase will touch on managing user conflict, and not every trail is built for every user or every multi-use. There's different levels of multi-use trails. There's different seasons of multi-use trails, and managing how those interactions happens in that planning and design phase.
We'll go to Mike, who's calling. He's trail master for an ATV club in Parsonsfield. Hi, Mike. Thanks for calling in.
How are you, dear?
I'm wonderful. Tell us about the work that you all do.
Well, what we do, we've actually met with Brett from the state conservation, and he walks through our trail systems. He grades them, and he tells us where we need to do better on drainage. We're actually putting in a new trail, and we've met with him, and water bars, drainage, and everything's done to the specs that Maine has set to stop erosion. Another thing we do, which I'm going to be doing today, that last lady spoke about dust. We do dust control in our club, and we're actually, I'm actually going out today in the dirt roads that go by the houses. We are spreading calcium chloride to control the dust, and them residents really appreciate what we do. We put speed limit signs up to slow them down by their houses. So the clubs do a lot. And the last thing I'd like to say is we've also keep our trails clear and in good conditions in case there's ever a forest fire. They have good accessibility, the fire department has, and we actually have landowners ask us to connect our trails because 2 years ago they had a fire, and the only way they got in there was with an excavator. So, you know, we definitely help with the fires, and our club definitely cares about the other people that use the trails. We have horses, we have motorcycles, we have walkers, hikers. But basically, the clubs do care.
Mike, I really appreciate you calling in. And while you're on the line, I'm going to turn back to Doug. At the very beginning of the show, Doug, you said 25% of the money for the Trails Bond is for motorized trails, right? What kind of projects do you see this funding?
Everything you talked about, other than maintenance. The Maine Trails program cannot fund regular and ongoing maintenance. But if they're building new trails or renovating existing trails, replacing culverts, replacing or rebuilding bridges, all of those types of things are eligible for the Maine Trail program. And I, you know, this is a great time to just thank Mike and all of the other volunteers in all of the other sectors that maintain trails, thousands of trails, of miles of trails in the state of Maine. It's really significant. We've had applicants say that trails take care of themselves. Those applicants did not get funding because trails do not take care of themselves. Trails need regular maintenance, and we rely on an enormous volunteer army in the state of Maine to keep Maine's thousands of miles of trails open and accessible.
Mike, I want to ask you, is your trail club going to apply for any of this money? Do you have projects you'd like to, projects that you've been dreaming about?
Yes, we submitted this year. We heard back from Matt from the state. They has authorized $30,000 for our club because one of our landowners closed down one of our trails. It was inherited by his son, and he didn't want ATVs. So that's when we met with Colin from the plantation and Brett from the conservation, and we came up with a plan, and we had to get 3 estimates for this work. We submitted them to the state and also money for trail upkeep, just new culverts and stuff. And right now we're just working with the town to sign off, and hopefully we'll get our money. We got our paperwork in time. We just were missing a signature from the selectman. So as soon as we get that, we'll be getting our money. And we do appreciate everything that the state of Maine does.
Well, Mike, I really appreciate you calling in and adding your voice to the conversation. Mike's calling in from the Parsons Field area, where he is trail master for an ATV club. Let's see here. In a related post, an email from Eric, I was wondering if one of your panel members could talk about the snowmobile trail system. I live at a place where one ran through the property. I never used a snowmobile on them, but it was an awesome walking trail that connected neighborhoods and stores. Doug, you're nodding again. So maybe the people using the snowmobile trail are not thinking of themselves as a hiker, but just using that as a great place to get where they want to go.
Yes. So during the workshops I've been holding over the last month, I asked the club members, specifically, whether they felt their trail was single motorized use. And universally, they all agreed that their trails were actually multi-use, and that in their local communities, snowmobile trails were also used by people who wanted to go skiing or snowshoeing or walking or mountain biking. So the interesting thing about the designation of motorized, non-motorized, diverse use is that almost all of the trails in the state of Maine depending on how you look at it, are in some form or another multi-use. Most clubs most snowmobile clubs maintain their trail system for snowmobiles, but absolutely allow and encourage other uses as long as they're accommodate the snowmobilers.
We'll go to George calling from Bowdoin. Hi, George, go ahead.
Yes, I was calling in regards to the conditions of these trails. I have property on a discontinued road. The ATVs have been in and tore the road up, ruts 2 to 3 feet deep, and I am very disappointed and upset about this. Actually, there's been a vehicle in there that got stuck, took pictures of it, put it on Facebook and bragged about it, and the law enforcement basically just said, oh, it's a bad thing, it shouldn't happen, no action or anything taken on it.
George, is this because of the wet spring we've had? Is this recent?
For years, the vehicle that I'm speaking of, it was mired up to the axles and had to be winched out. Happened last year.
Okay. Doug, what advice do you have for George?
That's a tough one to address. There's a number of things that need to be discovered, not the least of which, I think, is who's the actual owner of the discontinued road. And this might be a role for Inland Fisheries and Wildlife with their landowner relations program. If it's a town road, then there's local implications in terms of access and use of that town road. So it's difficult to say without more information.
Yeah, George, good luck to you. And I can tell how much you care about your part of Maine. George calling from Bowdoin. An email here from Henry. Can the guests talk about what does and doesn't go into maintaining a trail? Also, I'd like to volunteer to help maintain a trail near me. What's the best way to finding out how to help? Aaron, I'm thinking that, every once in a while you need people with a chainsaw when a tree falls over a trail, or somebody who's got a strong back to help spread some gravel where something's washed out. But I know that I'm only scratching the surface. What else goes into maintaining a trail?
Yeah, definitely scratching the surface. So a lot of what we talk about with trail work is keeping the water out of the trail or the trail out of the water. So maintaining drainages, so cleaning those reinforced grade dips, those armored drains, those nicks, all this trail terminology I'm throwing out at the last minute here. So maintaining that drainage, deberming a trail where water, the hillside hydrology, water can't get across the trail tread. Proper pruning of woody plants, cutting at the branch collar, and then having proper training to install, when to install and where to install some of that crush and fill material to maintain that hillside hydrology. That's a little bit more of that heavy lifting. A lot of the volunteers end up doing more of that deberming, drainage cleanage, the pruning the corridor, and then removal of some of those trees that come down.
All right. And Henry, Doug, what about the second half of Henry's question? How do you go about finding out how to help?
That's an interesting question. I think the best answer is reach out to your local land trust, your local municipality, go to where your trails are and learn who the trail manager is and reach out and make your services available.
And you talked about the army of volunteers. The question that Henry is asking is not a minor one, is it?
It's not a minor one. And from the field, the feedback generally is from folks like Mike or, the trail stewards in their clubs, is that there aren't people stepping up to do what Henry's doing. Invariably, people want to use the trail, want to enjoy the trail, but don't want to take the time to help take care of the trail. So we need more folks to take care of the trails.
Well, those are final words and good final words. Thank you both for joining us today. Douglas Beck, the Outdoor Recreation Program Manager with Maine's Bureau of Parks and Lands. Erin Amadon is the founder of Town 4 Trail Services. She's also the recent past president of the Professional Trail Builders Association. Today's sound engineer was Sam Tracy. Our theme music was composed by Mike Jandro. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Every Friday afternoon, we send out our newsletter, and you can find out what's coming up next week on Maine Calling. You can subscribe to that for free at mainecalling.org. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.